Welcome to the Next Level Human Podcast. As a human, you have a job to do. In fact, you have four jobs: to earn and manage money, to attain and maintain health and fitness, to build and sustain personal relationships, to find meaning and make a difference. None of these jobs are taught in school, and that is what this podcast is designed to do: to educate us all on living our most fulfilled lives through the mastery of these four jobs. I'm your host, Dr. Jade Tita, and I believe we are here living this life for three reasons and three reasons only: to learn, to teach, and to love. In this podcast, I will be learning, teaching, and loving right along with you. I'm grateful to have your company. Here's to our next level. What's going on, everybody? Dr. Jade Tita here, host of the Next Level Human Podcast, and I have someone I've been wanting on the show here for a while, Casey Jo Orvidas, who's got a PhD in psychology. And as you all know, I have a lot to say on the coaching profession and a lot of us professionals. One of the things I'm going to tee you up here, Casey Jo, and Casey Jo and I have known each other for a while online. We got to meet in person at a conference last year. And she has become, I think, a leading resource for a lot of us in this profession to get us up to speed on what we actually need to be doing around mindset. But I'm going to tee this up for you, Casey Jo, and just say something that may get me in trouble with a lot of the listeners, because as you know, a lot of people on this podcast are professionals. I got a ton of them here. My contention is that while I love the coaching profession, and I think we need more coaches, not less, I don't think coaches are very well trained. And I know I'll get in trouble for that, but that's sort of what I have seen. And so that is why I want you on here. And I also know you have a coaching training that you do to train coaches and professionals to be better coaches, which we'll talk about at the end of this. But I want to get your take on that, just to start out. Do you think I'm right about this, wrong about this? Like, and if so, what do you think goes wrong in the coaching world? Let's just get into this and talk about what's right or wrong about the industry.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to side with you on this one to a pretty large extent. And it's not necessarily that, I'll say this, it's not necessarily that coaches are missing nutrition and exercise education. I think a lot of coaches, most coaches, have a pretty good solid foundation when it comes to nutrition and exercise. And obviously there is varying degrees of levels that you can reach when it comes to your understanding of the human body in whatever way that we're talking about. And yes, there are still some coaches who are probably better equipped to help people than others when we're talking about kind of, I guess we'll say those, the baseline health and fitness coach things, right? Mm. But at that point, no matter where you're at, as far as your level of education, your experience, your training, when it comes to nutrition and exercise, you could be the smartest, the best coach when it comes to those things. If you don't have a foundation of understanding how to change human behavior and how to work and communicate with humans, a lot of what you're doing, you know, those advanced certifications, specializations, things like that, are going to fall flat. And I'm sure a lot of coaches listening to me are like, yeah, I know so much, but I barely ever even get to implement some of it because my coaches, or my clients rather, don't stick to the plan. They don't follow through with it, what they say they're going to do. They don't listen to me, et cetera, and so on, right? So that can be really frustrating too for the expert coach when it comes to nutrition and fitness, because they don't actually even feel like they get to use their expertise to the ability that they want to. So what's really missing here is an understanding of the science. And I say science very, very clearly here, the science of mindset and behavior change. There's a lot of mindset coaches out there, you know, the whole woo-woo, believe in yourself, manifestation crowd, which Love those. Love that crowd. Also a member of that crowd. But the problem is so many coaches place way too much emphasis in that, and they become just the cheerleader coaches, or they think that they're helping clients work through behavior changes and mindset blocks, when the reality is they may actually be pushing those clients in the other direction. So my biggest thing is to really start to empower coaches to realize that there aren't really any uncoachable, quote unquote, clients out there. There is just poor coaching practices. And that's kind of like a hard pill to swallow. But Jade, at least you and I are maybe kind of on the same page with that.
Yeah, 100%. And for those of you listening to this, by the way, don't turn off this podcast if you're not a coach, because actually for those of you who are looking for help, you're going to get a backdoor sort of look into what is going to make the biggest difference for you. So let's get into this, Casey Jill. So walk us through the basic sort of ways that people change that the majority of coaches are missing. Like, what's the, and I know we could write three books on this, but in your opinion, what's sort of the base that people need to know, the base of the pyramid that coaches need to know about the basics of how humans change?
Yeah. Big question for sure. And we could go a few different directions with this, but I do think, like, foundationally, what we need to understand is how humans are making decisions, how they're seeing the world, how they're making sense of things, how they're assigning meaning to certain things, because all of that is going to influence how you should be coaching that person. And if you can understand sort of their worldview, you can be a much better coach for them. And what I'm kind of talking about here, all of this can be nicely, neatly packaged up into the world of mindset. And your mindset at the end of the day is the lens that you're taking to see the world through and assign meaning to things, make sense of things, etc. We can then break that down into two separate mindsets, growth versus fixed mindset, which I'm sure everyone has heard at least to some degree who is listening. And as a coach, it should be your goal to constantly and consistently work your clients towards more of a growth mindset. So what's a bummer is that a lot of coaches get clients who they realize have a fixed mindset. You know, these clients are saying, no, this never works for me. I can't do it this way. This is not possible for me. I'm not capable. I'm not worthy. I'm not enough, etc. All fixed mindset type of statements. And then the coach goes, well, what am I supposed to do with this? My hands are tied. If that's what you think, if you're not motivated, if you don't want to be here, you're the one who's paying me. What am I supposed to do? And the reality is, again, if you can understand and know how to leverage the science of mindset and behavior change, and that can be through, honestly, down to as specific as certain questions that you're asking this client to help guide them towards coming up with solutions on their own, or doing less focus on their weaknesses and things that they need to fix, and starting to really, really pay attention to where their strengths are and how you can help them leverage those things. I mean, there's a whole host of things that you can do as the coach once you have an understanding of this type of science. And I say science, but at the same time, too, I want everyone listening to understand that there's really easy to implement things here and strategies and tools. It's not, you don't need to go sit down and read a textbook, or you don't need a PhD like me in order to be doing this stuff. So I hope that answers your question, but it's just kind of like, that really is the foundation.
Yeah. And let me throw a hypothesis at you, or just a statement, to see what you think about this. So when I oftentimes think about this, I see it as there's habits and behaviors, right? And we could tell people, hey, eat this way, exercise this way, do these behaviors. And then there's sort of identity and beliefs. And from my perspective, and this is what I want to know from you, the expert, from my perspective, I go, well, identity and beliefs, isn't that what habits and behaviors flow out of? And isn't that where we can make the difference of fixed mindset versus growth mindset? So one thing that I think I'm hearing, and I want you to correct me on this, is that we could certainly go, hey, do these habits, do these behaviors. But if someone has this fixed mindset, this identity that I am not this, I am this, I can't do that, I can only do this, then we're talking about sort of these identities and beliefs. And then for me, behind that is a set of stories and narratives that this person essentially has, whether consciously or unconsciously, that they are playing on repeat. And so I'm wondering what you think of that and how that fits into moving someone into a fixed, from a fixed mindset to this growth-based mindset. How does that fit in? Is that accurate? Is it not accurate? And how do we correct that? I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
I love that this is just how your brain works. So with that said, it is kind of like a chicken or the egg phenomenon a little bit, right? So is it the identity that's creating the mindset, or is it the mindset that's creating the identity? Mm-hmm. And I think truthfully, they just play together a lot, and they bounce off of each other, and it can go either direction. I can tell you some of the research that I have done myself on mindset and fitness behavior specifically. We found that yes, having a growth mindset about your level of fitness, so you believe that you can continue to improve and change your level of fitness and become a more fit individual. If you have a growth mindset there, there is this direct relationship to more frequent exercise. So people who have a growth mindset about fitness exercise more frequently. We see this relationship for sure, but then it becomes, what's going on in between that relationship? So for my nerds out there, we're looking at like mediators or moderators, right? Like what's in between? What are these variables that maybe are essentially your mindset is then hitting on these other variables, and those other variables are what actually causes you to exercise more frequently. So in this research that I did, we found that identity was one of those variables. So essentially having a growth mindset about how fit you are capable of becoming, if you have a stronger one of those, stronger growth mindset, you are more likely to have a stronger identity around fitness and health behaviors. And that is what is actually leading you to exercise more frequently. So we see this mindset to exercise connection, but the reality is it's through this identity piece. So it is a really big thing. And that's not to say I can't tell you from this research, we didn't essentially look at it going the other direction, right? Mm-hmm. So if your identity is actually creating that mindset, but I think we can all understand how that would be the case. But for coaches who are listening, for those of you who are listening, you're just wanting to work on your own health and fitness and be more consistent with it. If you can start to develop more of a growth mindset around your fitness behaviors, that's going to lead you to start feeling like I am a fitness person. You know, I am a person who exercises. And once you start feeling that way, as we can all understand, it's so much easier to be consistent with actually getting to the gym and actually going and exercising consistently. So there is that connection we know for sure. Of course, then it becomes, well, what else goes into your identity and how else is your identity affected by things? And there's three different books we could write on this, right? But that we know for sure. And that is some of the work that I did myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this idea, because the way I think about it is if we look at identity sort of in the middle, and then we look at what we're doing, I mean, obviously the brain is watching us all the time. So this idea of the as if principle, you know, you do a thing and the brain becomes more convinced you are the thing. But then on the other side of that, there's a story about who you already are. So I love the way you're framing this, where you're essentially saying, yes, identity is playing a role, if I'm hearing you correctly, but there are multiple ways and multiple environmental triggers and stories and unconscious stuff that are feeding in to identity. And we don't necessarily know all those things yet, but we know a few based on some of the research that you're talking about. So how do we then begin to change people if they have sort of a stuck mindset? What are the things, the tools that we can use for ourselves and coaches can use to begin to, you know, it sounds like what you're saying, if someone says, I am not this, what then can we begin to do to drop the breadcrumbs or help them see themselves differently? I'm curious, what evidence-based things do we have, or what practical-based things clinically have you seen that help begin to move that needle?
We'll be back after a quick break.
All right, time to talk about one of our sponsors. This one is one of my favorites. It's a long-time sponsor. You all know it. And if you don't, you are in for a treat. AG1. Now, for those of you who do not know AG1, I am very excited to introduce you to AG1, because it is one of the products that I've been taking for some time, and I take this almost every single day. It acts as my multivitamin. It acts as my probiotic. It acts as my green drink. It does a lot of different things. It's an antioxidant and it has adaptogen herbs in it. This is something I use straight up, a scoop in water. It's also something, surprisingly, that I put into my protein shakes. It does turn those protein shakes green, but the flavor is so neutral that I don't even notice it. And it is a great way to get all these nutrients in. The things I love about AG1 is all the things I just mentioned, but the fact that when you think about it, look at all the different products it replaces. Prior to AG1, I was taking a bunch of stuff and it has replaced 3 to 5 different products for me. And so I really love this product. It is what most people would consider a greens drink if you just looked at it, but it is so much more than that. Now, I've taken greens drinks in the past. Number one, they tend to taste like swamp water. I love AG1 because it's a very neutral, pleasant flavor. And the other thing is that many of these used to raise my blood sugar because they put other things in it, extra starches, tapioca starch in particular, and AG1 does not do that. The other thing about AG1 is it does testing constantly on keeping its product clean, and it is on its 50-plus iterations, so they keep making this product better and better. But look, don't take my word for it. Really, you should try the product. To get AG1, all you have to do is go to drinkag1.com/next level. drinkag1.com/next level. And they have a couple deals for you specific to that link. This is one of my favorite products. I urge you to get on AG1. It's going to be one of those things that you do for a very long time and be extremely beneficial for your health. Check the product out, drinkag1.com/next level, and let's get back to the show.
Yeah, and that is like the golden question, right? So how do we take someone who has a fixed mindset about this stuff and translate it into growth mindset so that we can now change their identity, make them more self-efficacious, and then therefore exercise more frequently? Like that's the golden equation, right? And the first answer that I have is a very unsexy answer, and it really is becoming more aware of where your fixed mindset is showing up. You truly cannot expect to change anything in your life without understanding where your baseline is. You can't improve something that you don't know what it is you need improving. So spending some time to really just be the researcher on your own life, on your clients' lives, and start to pick out where is this fixed mindset really showing up. And many of you may be listening and be like, okay, great, but what does that even look like, sound like? What is it I'm looking for? And we mentioned a couple things here, like you can pay attention to language. If you find yourself or your client saying, I'm just not the type of person to track macros, or that's a very clear indicator, right? Or something like, I don't know, I could try that, but it's just never worked for me in the past. Or I just don't think like I'm going to be capable of doing that. Like, sounds great in theory, but so those are all very like alarm bells should be going off, like fixed mindset, fixed mindset, fixed mindset. But there's some others, and honestly, most others are relatively sneaky, and it does require you to pay pretty close attention. So a few that I like to point out for people who are like, all right, I'm ready to do this. I'm ready to pay attention to where my fixed mindset is. Look for how you respond, or maybe your clients respond, to feedback, setbacks, and success. So feedback, just like what you're all thinking, right? You're getting feedback from someone else, a coach, your boss, your friend, your mom, whatever. How do you respond to feedback? Or if you're paying attention to how your clients respond to feedback when you give them feedback, this is a really great way to, like, you know, put the feedback out there and pay attention to what you get back. So someone with a fixed mindset is going to see feedback as either something they need to get defensive about because it feels like a personal attack. Because if they have a fixed mindset, they think, this is who I am. So if you're giving me feedback on that being incorrect, now I'm personally attacked. So they can get defensive, maybe a little bit dismissive, may try to justify why they did the things that they did and how it might be still correct in some way, and just really not be fully accepting. And they may not do that like very directly. Some people definitely will. Other people may say, cool, thanks. And then the back of their head are like, she's wrong. So someone with a growth mindset on the flip side of the coin would be honestly eager to get that feedback. And I'm actually thinking about myself. I'm going through like a 3-part training series right now for coaches that I'm teaching. And I have 2 of my staff members that come to these Zoom calls, make sure everything goes smoothly, kick out any lamos, that sort of thing. And after the fact, I always go, okay, feedback immediately. What did you think? How did it feel? How did it feel for you guys on your end? I'm like craving the feedback because I know that's an opportunity for me to improve, that I can use that data as a way to get better for the next call, for the future presentations, et cetera. So that is a very much so a growth mindset way of looking at things. So if you're a coach and you're giving feedback and you have a client who comes back to you, who's like, oh, that's actually really helpful. Like, what else you got? Like, that is very indicative of a growth mindset. So the next one is setbacks. Something happens, your client goes off the rail over the weekends, or maybe this was something that you did, that sort of thing. How do you respond to those situations where you quote unquote fall off the wagon type of situation, right? You have this little bit of a setback. Someone with a fixed mindset is going to see this as indicative of the fact that they aren't capable. That essentially like, okay, I knew it all along, and now I have proof. Now I have proof that I'm not capable of doing this, right? And every time there's a setback, it just becomes like another like mark against them in that way. Whereas someone with a growth mindset would see a setback as like, oh, that didn't work so well. That's good to know. On to the next thing, you know? So essentially like piling up all of these different ways that did not work, that is actually very good information for me. So if you're a coach, you can kind of see when your clients have setbacks, pay attention to the language they use to describe the setback, describe themselves, what they're planning to do next. Because if you have a client who comes back to you and is like, okay, this is what happened this weekend. Don't feel really good about it. Can we talk about what needs to be done to make sure this doesn't happen again? Or what other ways could I do this differently next time versus a client who maybe says, see, coach, I told you, like, I'm just not cut out for this stuff. And you can see very quickly where their mindset might be lying. And then the last one is success. And when I say success, I don't mean success of yourself, like celebrating yourself, which is a whole nother topic, but success of other people. Like, how do you view the success of other people, specifically when they are successful in the things that you would like to be successful in? So someone with a fixed mindset, let's say Susan is scrolling Instagram. She's checking out all of her high school old friends, what they're doing, what they're up to, what their lives look like now. And she comes across this girl that she grew up with who used to be very overweight, could never get the boys, that sort of thing. Now has this big, beautiful family. She's lost a ton of weight. Like, she's thriving, right? And you as Susan are wanting to lose weight and wanting to start a family and all of these things. If you have a fixed mindset, when you come across this gal from high school, Susan is going to sit there and start to justify all the reasons why she was successful and why herself as Susan was not. Mm-hmm. So she might say, oh, you know, she always had like a really wealthy family. So she probably got like hooked up this way or that way. She probably has a really expensive trainer, probably has like an in-home chef or something like that. Or, you know, she was a really good athlete still. So maybe it really just like was her genetics and that's why she's able to do this. Or you just might feel jealous. Like, how can she have this thing that I want and I can't? And all of that is very indicative of having a fixed mindset. And you may not realize those things, right? But if you find yourself justifying, you wouldn't automatically assume, oh, that's my fixed mindset talking. But it is, because you're thinking of all of these different like ways and reasons that you can't have what she has. And it's not possible for you because of these fixed traits, right? Whereas someone with a growth mindset would be scrolling Instagram, coming across this situation and thinking, oh my gosh, this is so cool. She literally made the transformation that I want to make, which means it's possible. I see this as inspiration. Maybe I should reconnect with her and see how she was able to do it. And she'd give me some tips, some pointers. Maybe she has some ideas of what I could try. And now it becomes this whole like hopeful feeling rather than despair. And that is such a serious difference when you're actually trying to work towards that goal between, I can't have this. This person can have it, but I can't, versus, oh, this person has it. That means I can too. Serious, serious difference, right? So paying attention to that. So, okay, I'll leave you at that. I know that was a lot, but there are a few that are really, really, really common ones.
We'll be back after a quick break.
All right. Time to break into the show for one of our sponsors. This is a brand new sponsor, and there is a lot of neat research around this product that you're going to want to listen to and pay attention to. The product is Qualia Senolytic. This product helps to address one of the key discoveries of the last decade in regard to aging. As our cells age, many of them begin to become arrested in their development. These cells stop dividing. They become senescent cells, kind of like zombie cells, right? These cells that are just hanging around, no longer dividing and secreting negative compounds that have negative effects on the body. This is a product, Qualia Senolytics, that addresses this effect. Now, you might think, well, okay, well, what about exercise and diet and fasting and cold plunges and all these things? Aren't these things going to help with this? Well, here's the interesting thing. We all age, right? No matter what you do, we all know that we're going to age and you're going to see the signs of aging. Research is suggesting this is because of these senescent cells and all these things I just mentioned, fasting, proper diet, exercise, all these things seem not to make much of a difference when it comes to these senescent cells. So how do we get rid of these zombie cells and help that middle age feeling that a lot of us get after we turn 40? I know I did. That's what this product, Qualia Senolytics, does. It's like pruning the yellowing leaves off of a dead plant. It removes worn out senescent cells to allow for the rest of the body to begin to thrive. And all you need to do is use this compound 2 days a month, 6 capsules one day, 6 capsules the next day, and you will get the effects of these senolytic agents to remove these zombie cells from the body. The formula is non-GMO, it's vegan, gluten-free, and the ingredients are meant to complement one another, factoring into the combined effect of all these ingredients together. Not only that, this product comes with a 100-day money-back guarantee. If you don't begin to feel higher energy levels, feeling younger, more productive, and more enthusiastic, and especially what happened to me, less aches and pains. How do you get this product so you can take advantage of getting rid of these senescent cells? All you have to do is go to neurohacker.com/human. And when you do, you'll get up to $100 off. When you use the code HUMAN at checkout, you'll get an additional 15% off. That's neurohacker.com/human and use the code HUMAN on checkout. Look, aging is one of those things that is incredibly difficult to do, even when we're doing all the right things with diet and exercise and fasting and all the tools we know. This is one of those products that is insurance on helping us age better. Check out Qualia Senolytics, neurohacker.com/human, and let's get back to the show. It's juicy, and let me just reframe this, and you correct me if I'm wrong on any of these points, because I think it's important. So it sounds like what you're saying is, okay, Jade, and everybody listening, first, self-awareness. Self-awareness, and then you're kind of breaking this down for us into two different, you know, sort of domains. One, a growth mindset, people who are looking to get better, looking for feedback, taking the lessons from setbacks, looking for ways to learn from other people's successes. That's one group, sort of we can call them the growth mindset group. The other group is having the exact different reaction to these feedback situations, these setback situations, and these successes of other people. And so then the idea is that now we have these two buckets, right? So we know. So to me, I'm assuming that in order to begin to get results for people, we have got to do step one, move them from this fixed mindset to this growth mindset. And so there has to be this jump somehow. I also would suspect that when you're dealing with someone who's got a fixed mindset, as you alluded to, and you point this out directly to them, look at these negative stories that you're doing, look at this mindset that you have, they're immediately going to get defensive. So am I right in saying that the first step to change is moving people to the growth mindset? And am I also right in saying that there's going to be some finessing around the resistance that comes up with a fixed mindset person? And if I am right about that, how do we maneuver that as coaches? How do we begin to finesse this to move people over? And then, of course, I want to go off into how do we get the growth mindset person to actually start seeing results?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So definitely correct in that a lot of self-awareness is involved here. And the problem is most people just aren't even aware that this is what's holding them back. This is why you have so many clients and people who are saying, like, I just don't understand why I can't stay consistent. Like, I know what I need to do, but I just can't do it. We hear that all of the time. And a lot of that is coming from this, like, buried fixed mindset stuff that they don't realize they're self-sabotaging themselves and they don't even realize it, right? So, and I would say first step, it's kind of like the primer step to the first step is helping clients recognize that fixed mindset and where that's coming up for them without being direct about it, like you said, because for sure there will be pushback, especially if you're talking to someone who has a relatively fixed mindset about this thing. There's a good chance that if you come to them and say, hey, what I'm hearing is you have a fixed mindset, so we need to work on that. They're going to be like, excuse me, what? Especially because they aren't aware of it, right? Now it feels like a personal attack. And that's absolutely the wrong way to go about it. So a lot of it needs to be quite indirect, like in between the lines, inside the questions that you're asking that aren't so direct. So some of those questions can be as simple as, can you tell me more about why you feel that way or why you think that way? You know, if someone comes to you and says, I'm not that type of person, or I don't feel like I'm capable, or it's never worked for me in the past, and help them give you more of that story behind it. And what can be really interesting is if you're asking questions like this and they start to like divulge the story and all of these pieces of information, they may start to shift their own mindset in that moment and start to see and like, yeah, but that was something that happened to me a long time ago, so I probably really shouldn't be attached to it anymore. Or I guess I can't really compare who I was when I was 15 now that I'm 45. You know, they'll start to say some of these things. And then you as the coach, it's your responsibility to be on the lookout for those. Those are like pieces of change talk that we're hearing, and essentially attach to that those pieces and continue to like snowball with those pieces. So once they've started to give you some of that, grab it. Ask more about that. Oh, well, tell me more about the differences between age 15 and 45 for you, and really try to drive some of that stuff home. So by the end of that conversation, they're going to leave and think, wow, I was thinking about this all wrong. And that is the beginning of a mindset shift, right? Mm-hmm. Now they're no longer going to be so much attached to that, especially if you can ever, ever get someone to think about something differently than they were before, they're going to remember that. That's going to change, especially if it was maybe this long, like old belief that's been there for a long time that they didn't even realize was like doing something. And now they're going, whoa, light bulb moment. That's why I was thinking that way. And that doesn't really even make sense. That's going to change. Like, you've shifted it. Yes, it could always like fall back that way again, but there's a good chance you've made a little bit more of a permanent shift just by doing that. So that's kind of how the beginning stages, I would say, of that process would look. And it's obviously ongoing throughout the coaching relationship too.
Yeah, it sounds like, I love this because it sounds like opening this up is really about just getting people to think laterally. Like, I think you know what that is, but maybe some of you listeners don't really know what that is. Lateral thinking is just really about, like, if I have like this cup I'm drinking out of coffee, right? So I can use it for coffee. I can also put soil in it and use it to plant, you know, put a plant in it. I could turn it upside down and play it as a drum. Like, there's lots of different things I could do with this cup versus, you know, just drink something out of it. That's lateral thinking. It sounds like from my perspective, you're looking for them to getting them to start thinking laterally about their historical narrative in a sense. You know, it's like, oh, can you see? It's almost like, can you see where you first made that choice without telling them, let's look and see where you first made that choice. And then maybe they come to awareness, and that's your first goal, self-awareness. How long does that typically, that process typically take? I know it's going to be individual, you know, for people. Some people get stuck there a long time. Some people can do it pretty quickly. And I do a few things that you can shoot holes in. I'll just share with you because I think it's useful sometimes when I'm coaching. Sometimes some of the things that I'll do with people is I will say, as I've gotten to know them, that's interesting. When did you make that choice? Can you remember when you made that choice? Is that a good thing or a bad thing to sort of put up? What I'm doing there is just dropping breadcrumbs in terms of stories, you know, that they, you know, I'm helping them to see that they're telling stories about life, that it's all a story, that they could potentially see it another way. And so I'm wondering, does stuff like that work when you are going through this process with people? The other thing I'll oftentimes do is go, oh yeah, that's interesting. I had a client like this, or I like to use myself a lot of time to self-deprecate a little bit, to let them know that I'm human, that, you know, I have also been stuck for a long time. And then I saw that I was, you know, sort of telling myself the wrong story. And part of what I like to do is just because I like to go, look, you're only human. All humans get stuck. They get in these stuck mindsets. They get in these fixed mindsets. And all humans have the opportunity to get out of these. And here are some examples. And I also like to look for examples within their own life where they were able to get out of a fixed mindset in another domain. So I'm wondering, are any of these red flags for you where you're like, ooh, Jade, you should have done that a little differently? Or are these useful techniques? I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, really good. All of them are very, very good. Kind of helping them get to the core of it with that first one. And then with this last one, seeing other aspects of their life where maybe they were a little bit more growth mindset oriented and were doing things in that way. And then thinking, well, what's the disconnect here, right? Mm-hmm. This is actually a really important point to make too, because people often speak about growth versus fixed mindset as if it is just this blanket thing that you have or you don't have across all areas of your life. Mm-hmm. But we know for sure inside the research that you can have a growth mindset in one area and be an entirely fixed mindset in another area. So this is where it can get really interesting when you're working with other people or thinking about yourself and you're like, what the heck? I feel like I am really good about being able to see how I can improve and change and get better when it comes to my career. And I'm excelling in that. But when it comes to my own health and fitness, I am not seeing the same thing. Like, what is going on here? A lot of times there are differently held belief systems. And so if you can also help clients start to recognize, oh yeah, there is a disconnect here, but then what's going so well in your career? Let's talk about your strengths and how you see yourself over here. And then how now do we bring it over to this other side of health and fitness as well? So I really think that that can be a super powerful way for them to start to recognize like what the differences are. Because again, so many people are just lost and wondering, why am I like this? And if you can start to give them more understanding as to why they are like this, that is power. That is fuel for change. It really is. And a big part of this too, that I wanted to bring up with the lateral thinking, if we can help our clients think more flexibly, like a big problem is that so many people are just have such cognitive rigidity is the biggest issue, right? Mm-hmm. So the more we can help them think more flexibility and introduce more like psychological flexibility in general and make them think about how this could look different ways, you know, like with the cup example, it can be like many different things. We want them to be thinking that way about their lives because there is, you know, the all or nothing thinking trap. People really start to think very black or white, good or bad. So the more we can do that, the more growth mindset oriented thoughts and actions are going to be like easier to achieve too.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, Casey Joe, because I look at it like as coaches, you know, we should be, you know, getting people to think about possibility narratives, right? Like I'm always looking at it like that. I always feel like I'm dropping breadcrumbs, you know, I'm dropping breadcrumbs and seeing which ones they pick up. And one of the places where I do this is I tend to see, you know, the Next Level Human podcast. Anytime anyone listens to this podcast, the introduction says, you know, as a human, you have a job to do. In fact, you have four jobs. You got, you know, finance, you got health and fitness, you got personal relationships, and you kind of have purpose and meaning. And so I see this as like a three-legged stool. And we all know what it's like to be on a three-legged stool where all stools aren't balanced, like, you know, and you're kind of floating around like this. To me, I'm looking at where's the one that is strong and how can we use aspects of that to bolster the other leg that maybe is weak. And then I look at narratives that go deep, you know, like I oftentimes think about the childhood developmental period where it's safety and security needs and the adolescent period of acceptance and belonging needs. And you'll oftentimes see these stories begin in certain places, right? You know, in freedom and autonomy, you know, needs that are in our early adulthood. But I think it's really cool what you're saying, because I think that when, if we can spot where, you know, these areas where people are successful in their lives and areas where they're not successful, and then begin to say, hey, look what you're doing here, and you could be doing that over here, dropping these breadcrumbs, we're going to get, you know, I think, better results. I want to ask you now about, once we start to get somebody over and we start to see this cognitive flexibility, we get to see them in possibility thinking now, what happens next? How do we begin to drive this? And I'll start you off with a little narrative, because I want to hear, I've really been anxious to ask you about this in person anyway, so I'll just ask you about it here. The way I oftentimes see this, I see it as like, if you have two actors, right? Like, one actor is the person who shows up with their script, and they're, you know, like, let's say it's me, I'm Jade Tita, and then I'm playing a part as, you know, I don't know, Tony Soprano or something, right? So I go from Jade Tita, and I come in and I read the script for Tony Soprano, right? And once the actor says action, I start playing a role. And when the actor says cut, I go away and I'm back to Jade Tita. And then there's this other actor who's like the method actor, where it's like, once they get the part for Tony Soprano, right, they become that part immediately. They start playing a role when they wake up in the morning, and they play it. And when the director says action, they're playing, they've already been playing the role, so it's no different. And when the director says cut, they're still playing the role. So I tend to think of it like this, like you have to get people playing a role, but I've been wanting to ask you, the expert, about this idea, to see how you think about it. Is it accurate? Does it play, you know, does it play out in, you know, some of your research and some of your clinical experience, that we can take now this growth mindset person who's now ready to take on this role? And I see it as a difference between fake it till you make it and be it till you mm-hmm. see it, right? Faking is like the traditional actor, like, you know, okay, I'm gonna play a role, and when I'm around Casey Joe, I'm gonna eat good. But as soon as I get back to my house, I'm gonna freebase some Fritos, right? Versus the other person who's like, no, now whether I'm hanging out with Casey Joe or not, and she's watching me, my role is this. So what would a healthy, fit, functional person do? So I'm wondering how you see this. What would you add to it? What would you subtract? Where am I going wrong with this? How can coaches use a model? What's a better model, perhaps?
Yeah. This is really interesting. And I think both answers are correct, or both types of actors are correct, just at different time periods, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're trying to learn a new skill, get better at something, develop in some capacity, you are trying to shift from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset, you really are going up against these old patterns, this software literally in your brain. We know it can change. That's what neuroplasticity is, but it's not going to change immediately. As soon as you're like, oh, I feel like I can change, I have ability here, that's great. That's a great first step, but you're going to keep running into this old software trying to tell you, no, you can't, no, you can't, no, you can't. So you really do need to get the reps in and continue to try to push yourself down this different pathway and allow that old pathway to get old and unused and overgrown and not go that way anymore. But it's going to take time. So a lot of people, when they're going through this process, they're like, I just still don't fully believe it yet. Like, I'm not really sure I'm there. And that's totally normal. And that's exactly how it should feel. There should be some friction. There should be some, I'm not really sure I'm doing this right. Or why am I not immediately thinking in a growth mindset way? And I'm still like having some of these fixed mindset thoughts. It's exactly how it should be. So you do need to turn it on for a little bit, and then maybe it will turn off, and then you have to turn it on again. But over time, you might notice, as soon as the director says action, you're like, oh, I'm already there. That's really cool. So you'll start to notice that over time. And that is the best feeling ever, when you notice that your brain went the growth mindset direction without you actually having to put it there. And that will happen over time for sure.
We'll be back after a quick break.
All right. Well, I have a new partnership to announce that I am very excited about. And this partnership is with the Next Level Human company, ButcherBox. I consider them a Next Level Human company because they are doing everything they can to source the best quality meats, as well as source those meats from companies and farmers that are committed to sustainable and regenerative animal husbandry, raising animals in the way that they are naturally supposed to be raised and doing right by the environment. And it is just what it sounds like, a butcher box. Imagine you had a butcher right down the street from you that put a box together for you of all the best quality meats that you could find. And that is what Butcher Box does. They send them frozen right to your door. And the animals are the highest quality, 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef, never given antibiotics or hormones, humanely raised. Grass-fed beef is an incredible source of omega-3 acids, vitamins, and minerals. It is one of the healthiest foods on the planet. Not only is the beef superior, but they also raise crate-free pork that are humanely raised. Also, never with antibiotics or hormones in any of their meats. They also really pay special attention to their chicken. These are pasture-raised chicken, heirloom breeds. This means ancient breeds, wild breeds. They never give them antibiotics or hormones, and these are free-ranging animals that can run out in the pasture and eat all of the worms and bugs and everything else to make their meat incredibly healthy. And they also do free-range turkey and wild-caught seafood. And this seafood is wild-caught, sustainably harvested, no artificial coloring, no additives, just straight from the sea. Your health is going to get better, and it is much better for the environment. If you want to get involved, there are two ways to do this. One, you can go to drj.com/butcherbox, and you can choose between three curated boxes, or you can do what I do, which is make your own box. That's drj.com/butcherbox. And when you sign up using that link, you can choose between a free year of salmon, a free year of ground beef, or a free year of chicken breast. I love ButcherBox. I use them myself. I am so excited that they are now sponsoring the podcast. drjade.com/butcherbox. And let's get back to the show. So it sounds like, if I'm hearing you right, we have this old belief, right? For those of you who are listening, I'm just holding up one hand to like the video, right? So we have this old belief, and then we want to put in this new belief. And it sounds like you're saying this new belief is back here a little bit, right? It's like, it's not as practiced. And then slowly but surely, as we make this choice, we're sort of moving this forward and this moves backwards. And the only reason I'm doing it that way is because it sounds like, if I'm listening to you, people might think, well, I just put this new thing in and this other thing goes away. But what I'm hearing from you, Casey Joe, is like, actually, no, it's not going away. You're just now, it's almost like this competition. So there's a choice point that happens. You have to recognize that choice point, which I think goes back to your self-awareness thing. And then you have to make that choice. And slowly but surely, you know, that whole, you know, Hebb's law, you know, neurons that wire together, this particular new narrative begins to dominate. And then you start finding yourself, oh, now I'm the method actor. Now I am the thing. Whereas before I was just pretending to be the thing. I love that idea. What kind of things then, if that's the case, what kind of things get in the way of making this switch? And what kind of things do we know in the research can amplify our ability? Like, you hear things like, for example, some that I'll go ahead and throw out and see if they have validity from your perspective. Like, we hear that, okay, well, the top five people you hang out with, like if they're health and fitness people, you're more likely to play that health and fitness script instead of the couch potato script. So maybe that pushes that script forward, right? Or like other things like that. Our environment's, you know, sort of a big deal, right? So if I don't have it in the house, maybe that's something. I'm wondering, what are the things that you know based on evidence that are most efficacious? Is it you got to hang out with new people? Is it you got to change your environment? Is it, you know, something else? I'm just curious. Like, now we begin engineering our life, our mindset, and different things.
Yeah, the answer is all of the above and more. There are a lot of things that go into this, right? And for one person, they may not be as influenced by the people around them, whereas someone else, like, that is such a big influence for them. So again, self-awareness comes up here, but this is where working with a coach can be really helpful too. So they're actually prompting you with questions to figure out what those things are that may be still barriers for you going down this new path and like trying to steer clear of the old path. So spending more time there can be really, really helpful. And actually something that comes up for me, like self-control is a big part of a lot of this, right? Like we're talking about willpower, self-control, trying to go, whether it's in your head, like I'm trying to think a different way instead of the other way that is more comfortable and I'm more used to, like that requires self-control. And something that we see in the research, and this has come up and changed quite a bit in the last like 5 to 10 years, we used to believe that you really only had a certain amount of self-control that you got to use throughout the day. And as you used it, whether it was like with your kids, at work, at getting yourself to the gym, all of these things, you get to the end of the day and you have very, very, very little self-control left to give. I think we all can kind of feel that where we get to the end of the day and you're like, at the beginning of the day, I was perfectly fine with saying no to the second glass of wine, but now like there's no way. Definitely need that at least 2 glasses of wine, right? So I think we've all felt that, and that's kind of what the research supported as well until recently. And recently what we've learned is that it's not necessarily that you have more self-control or less self-control or gets depleted throughout the day. It's really the people who are good at self-control, self-proclaimed, I'm good at self-control versus someone who says, nope, that is not my strong suit. I give into temptation very easily. The difference is in their environments. It's in how often they're actually having to exert self-control in the first place. So the people who think they're really good at self-control, they're really no better than someone else. It's just that they aren't frequently in the position to have to use it. And the person who feels like I'm really bad at self-control, not my strong suit, they're no worse than the person who's good. It's just that they're constantly putting themselves in situations where they have to exert self-control. So the less often you're having to use self-control, the more you're going to feel like you're good at it. And that's the reality.
This is really interesting. Let me play this back to you to make sure I have this right. So there was this idea of the willpower battery, right? Which, you know, so the willpower battery gets drained throughout the day. So it sounds like what you're saying is that yes, but not really. Really what it's about is that the way you perceive or set up your environment makes you more or less likely to drain this willpower battery. So it sounded like you said two things there, though. It sounded like you said your mindset around, am I a good, do I have good willpower? Maybe that expands your willpower battery. And maybe the idea of when I create my environment and engineer my environment a particular way, it also expands my willpower battery. So maybe there's no willpower battery at all, really, but certainly our belief about whether we're good at this or not and our environment. It sounds like you're saying the environment might be more important. So they just think they're better at it, but they've really set up their environment so that they actually are. And so am I getting that right? I mean, I think it might be a little bit confusing. So let me just say it one more time. It sounds like you're saying the environment is all that matters. If you basically, you know, get your environment right, you're going to be more likely to not fall prey to these willpower things. And you're also going to think that you're better at willpower and control. And that is super interesting if I have that right.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. And then we also, to play off that too, we have other studies that show the people who don't believe in this idea of depleting willpower in the first place, they think like no matter what, like I can still exert self-control. Those are the people who essentially they're not able to experience those effects of the depleting willpower, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas someone who thinks like, oh yeah, that makes sense. You heard me with that wine example. You're thinking like, oh yeah, that's me. I definitely lose my willpower throughout the day. I don't have as much self-control if I have to use it more. If you believe that, it will be true. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of like these two different things where like your environment and your mindset matter the most. And ultimately, you get to create what that willpower battery looks like, whether it is very much a real thing or it doesn't exist at all. And that's all based on your own perceptions and your environment.
Yeah, you and I haven't talked about this yet, but we could talk about it now. But part of my work, because you know, I think you know I'm back getting my PhD in transpersonal psychology. And part of my interest and part of the research that I want to do, my hypothesis is that our stories and our narratives, and of course, I'm interested in where these narratives eventually come from. And of course, It's all a hypothesis until you prove it. But my hypothesis is exactly what you said, that it is the story that we tell about ourselves. And that story comes out of a historical narrative that ultimately determines how we manage all of this kind of stuff. And this, when I hear this, I'm like, oh, that's an interesting component, because it sounds like we're starting to see that perhaps this is a line of research that is pointing in that particular direction. And I also would say that when your narrative, and this is another thing that needs to be worked out in research, but when your narrative story is a particular way about who I am, then of course your environment is going to reflect that as well. So it's going to be harder to sort of tease out. And so here's another research question I just want to banter around with you now, if you don't mind just playing with me so we can have some of the discussions that I've been dying to ask you for a while now. One of the things as we go through this process, and I'm wondering, you know, of course, as the coaches are listening, there's two things that happen, right? Like, you know, you mentioned the manifestation people, right? And this idea of law of attraction, you just think a thing and it's going to come true, right? And from my perspective, like you, I like some of these ideas. I see them as largely, there's a large misapprehension there about how this probably works. But the way I see it is like, okay, you can think, right? And then there's a feeling attached with that. And then there's choices and action. So I think of it as, you know, being, if you're being a thing, I think of it as the way you think, the way you feel, the way you choose, and the way you act, all of those things being in alignment. And so part of my hypothesis also is, and you kind of alluded to this, but I just want to see what you think, is that we can come at this from any direction. And I do have my own bias at which direction I think matters more. So if we think about thinking, feeling, choosing, acting, all in sort of a line, to me, I go, I can change my thinking and maybe that influences my feeling, which influences my choices, which influences my actions. Or I can simply change my actions and then that then reinforces my choices. I feel a particular way and think a particular way. And I have a hypothesis that acting as if is a faster path to being versus thinking being a faster path to being. Now, of course, we want all of them in alignment, and I kind of can see them coming at it from either direction, that it's, of course, both and. But I'm wondering if you have an opinion on this based on your research, based on your clinical background. What do you think is more powerful? I mean, obviously, if we can think and act simultaneously, I just tend to think if you're thinking, you're not necessarily, that's not necessarily going to translate into acting. However, if you're acting, it's much more easily translated into thinking, feeling, and choosing. So I'm wondering what your thought is on this as if, you know, sort of principle. And one of the, I'll just give you, you'll know this study, but I'll just key it up for people who are, you know, maybe new to this idea. Like one of the studies that makes me think of this, that you may actually say, oh, this is going to, you know, is accurate or not, is this idea of, you know, essentially looking at people and saying, hey, go to your happy place like Happy Gilmore, and let's look at how fast those happy centers light up in the brain, you know, the areas associated with happiness. Or we can just force you into a smile, you know, by sticking, you know, a pencil in your teeth and forcing you into the smile, and then see how fast this sort of change happens. And it seems as if, based on some of this research, that simply laughing and smiling is perhaps a faster way to feel what you want to feel than thinking about this Happy Gilmore place. And so this is kind of what I'm thinking about. And I've always wanted to ask you about this to see what your thoughts are and how you've translated some of this research.
You know, what's funny is when you were talking about this, I was thinking about the pencil study. It is. Yeah. So you're actually doing the action and how that translate to feeling something, which, again, I want you guys to just picture how if you do it yourself right now, take a pencil and put it in your mouth and kind of forces you to smile in a way. It's not the best smile, but it's a smile nonetheless. And like that actually produces some sort of happiness feeling in people, right? Mm-hmm. How wild is that? So thinking about that too, like I think I agree with you that doing the thing, the actual action, is probably the quicker way. And I think part of this too is that we do already spend so much time in our head thinking about like, oh, what could this be like? What would this feel like? What would my life look like if? And that is not translating to it actually happening, like doing the behaviors that are associated with that thing. So I think too, a big part of this, that part of this conversation really is cognitive dissonance as well, where there is this disconnect between what we're doing and what we're thinking or how we see ourselves and then what the actions we actually end up taking. And when that is misaligned, we have cognitive dissonance and that feels really, really bad to us. As humans, we like to be consistent. We like to, hey, we say we're going to do something and then we do it. If we don't, that doesn't feel good. So I do think that there, that's part of this conversation in general. So if you're thinking all of the time, I want to do this thing, I want to be this way, whatever, but you're never actually taking any actions in alignment with that, you're going to run into this cognitive dissonance. I think it's what's interesting is if you do the action, you do the thing, but you're maybe not fully believing that you are that person who would do that thing yet, you're still doing the thing. So you're still proving it to yourself. I feel like there would be less of a cognitive dissonance there if the actions associated are actually being completed. So that's kind of like where my brain went with it and how I make sense of it. And I feel like that would be feel more consistent for us. And that's ultimately what we want to achieve. I lost you there for a second.
Yeah, I got you back. You just blipped out for a sec. Yeah. Yeah. So, and actually, you know, there's a book on this, Casey Joe. You probably know it. It's called The As If Principle. You know, and the research is not great necessarily in this area, but I'm fascinated with this, you know, sort of studying this. So I want to ask, I want to run one more thing by you, and then I want to talk about your coaching program. And so, you know, and I want to just reinforce for people what Casey Joe has been educating us on. So there's this idea of fixed mindset. We need to move them to growth mindset. She's teaching us the self-awareness. You know, Casey Joe, you've made us kind of go, look, self-awareness is everything. So then as a coach, that's one of the things we need to do subtly, right? Because we can't be in someone's face as a fixed mindset because we're going to run into, you know, people spend an awful lot of time defending their old identities instead of dismantling them. And so in a sense, we're kind of doing this psychological black ops as coaches, right? We're slowly trying to dismantle the way they see themselves, get them thinking laterally. Now we move them into the growth mindset. And Casey Joe has kind of educated us on how we can begin to help them start to make change now with this sort of old idea being, you know, sort of now having a choice point with a new idea and then working that sort of process so that the new idea becomes the dominant thing. And then we talked about this idea of, you know, this alignment in thinking, feeling, choosing, and acting, and that obviously we need both. But as a hypothesis, Casey Joe and I seem to be in agreement that maybe acting might be the better way to go here. And then I look at it like, okay, so if this is the case, this is the next and maybe last part I want to talk to you about is that, okay, so if we can take this continuum of thinking, feeling, choosing, and acting, with choosing and acting being the brain watching you do the thing. So the brain is becoming convinced, oh, Jade's not full of shit. He's actually doing what he says he's going to do. Still, perhaps thinking and feeling might not be fully online, right? Because then all of a sudden it's like, you know, action is and choices are contextual to a large degree. So, you know, can't always make, you know, the choices. Maybe I'm going to the gym and my brain's getting on board with that, but I'm also freebasing cheesecake every time I get, you know, stick my head in the refrigerator. And that's a whole other thing. So the idea then is, and this is something I'm just so curious what this happens is that we do, I think, have to thinking and feeling, right? We can split these four up to thinking and feeling and choosing and acting. And the thinking and feeling piece, I think, is really hard for people. And so I'm wondering what the tools are for that. For example, there's meditation techniques that can put you in, you know, sort of feeling-based emotions, like some of the research coming out of HeartMath Institute, which I think are really interesting, where people are doing heart-centered meditation and being able to feel a sense of gratitude that perhaps they haven't been able to feel before. And that translates into being different, right? Because we're impacting the feeling aspect of being. I'm wondering what evidence-based tools we have, if any, that you're aware of that are the best at helping us think and feel. Because from my perspective, we need to it's going to be far better if we can practice feeling the thing. Like if we can feel successful. I'll key this up for you just so we can make it more tangible. There's research that looks at older research that was looking at, for example, what I can remember about these studies is people shooting basketball free throws, right? And they have one group that's actually, they bring all the groups in, they shoot the free throws, they test them. And then they have one group sit up in the stands and imagine visualizing shooting the free throws and feeling as if they're making the free throws, but they're not actually taking the action. The other group is actually showing up to the gym every day and actually shooting free throws. Both groups tend to improve after these activities. And of course, the group that later on research looked at, the group that visualized and actually took the actions did the best. But I'm wondering what other tools we have besides visualization and feeling-based meditation, if any, we have to really practice this thinking and feeling aspect. And your thoughts on this in general, do you feel like this is junk science? Do you feel like this is really useful science? Do you feel like it has a role to play? Because the way I would see this is a coach could essentially be saying, you know, obviously they're working with their client one-on-one, dropping these cognitive flexibility, breadcrumbs, helping people move to this, you know, sort of more growth mindset. Is there a role to play where you can essentially say, okay, now I'm actually going to get you in feeling-based meditation, as well as, you know, some action-oriented, you know, personal development PRs, personal records, where they're actually doing things out in the real world. Are you aware of this concept making a difference, and do you use it and do you teach it to your coaches?
So I think yes, in a way, but maybe not exactly in the way that you are presenting it here. I think what happens more often than not are that people are really caught up in their thoughts and their feelings. And it's less about how do we bring more of that into it and more about like, how do we get maybe a little bit more clinical and logical about what the heck is going on in our brains, right? Mm-hmm. So something that comes up for me is a practice that I teach to coaches and we use with our clients at my own coaching company too. It's using pieces of cognitive behavioral therapy. Obviously, we are not therapists. That's not what I'm saying. But you can leverage cognitive behavioral therapy even for yourself, which is really, really cool. And it's something that you can do to help break negative thought patterns. So again, it's like these thought patterns or feelings, emotions, things that are coming up and you just can't make sense of, but yet they're driving your behavior. It's like we need to kind of like tweeze those things apart and figure out what's going on. So something that you can do with this, if you're having a recurring negative thought that seems to be getting in the way of you taking action or just feeling good, and it just keeps coming up for you, number one, obviously you have to identify what that thing is, but then you can start to think, number one, what evidence do I have to support this thought? And here's the thing. You're not having this thought if you have zero evidence. Something happened to you at some time in your life. You've had some sort of experience. There's been some sort of person who has made you have this thought, right? So think about it. Like, what evidence do you have to support this? So if someone's thinking, I'm not capable of losing weight, right? It's just like, I've tried so many different things. It doesn't work for me type of thing. So if that's the negative thought that's recurring, what evidence do you have to support that? Well, you've tried 12 different types of diets. None of them have worked. So like, that's some solid evidence. So you need to like give yourself some grace and know that your feelings are valid for that. But then this next step would be, well, what evidence do you have against that thought? And so we can say, okay, the evidence that I have against it is, well, I've never actually worked with a one-on-one health and fitness coach before. So although I may have quote unquote failed 12 times before, and that's making me feel like this isn't possible, where I'm at now and the resources that I have at my disposal now and what I'm doing now is totally different than anything I've done in the past. So that would be like comparing apples and oranges type of thing. Like, okay, cool. Evidence for, evidence against. Now taking that information, what's the most accurate depiction of this thought? Like really, like truly, what is real here? And so that person might think, I feel like I'm not capable because my track record has not been great. However, I'm trying different things now. So it's sort of unfair to compare that track record to where I am now. And it's like, okay, that is the reality. That's the truth, right? Now, how does it feel? This is sort of like step four at this point. How does it feel now that you've gotten to this point of recognizing the reality of this thought versus what's spiraling in your head. And for someone to really sit with that and think, like, I feel so much better now. Like, this feels more real. It feels more tangible. I feel more capable. I feel more powerful. I'm like more excited about what's to come. And so that's a really good process to sort of like sit with those thoughts and feelings and tweeze them apart. And I think, again, like, that's more so the issue that I see. Not like, let's get into our feelings and bring feelings in, but let's figure out what we're doing with the current feelings we have and how they may be like getting in the way or being detrimental. But at the same time, maybe there are some feelings that are beneficial and we could find those inside doing practices like this too. I think in general, the more that we can try to take a step back and remove ourselves from those thoughts and feelings and understand that thoughts can be just thoughts. You don't need to act on them. They don't need to turn into feelings. Can literally be just a thought, like, oh, that's interesting that my brain came up with that, and then move on. That's all. It doesn't need to go any further than that. And sometimes people just haven't even had that thought about their thoughts before, right? But the more we can remove ourselves and say, like, oh, there goes my brain again. Give your brain a name. Give your mind a name. Like, there goes, you know, Shirley again, spewing whatever bullshit she's got for me today. And the more you can do that, the better, and the more control you're going to have over those thoughts, and you can actually start to redirect them.
Yeah, I love that so much. That's so useful. And it does remind me of a lot of the internal family system stuff that, you know, that I work with, that you and I have talked about briefly offline. But yeah, this is so brilliant. It's also, that last little part too goes back to a very tangible way to do what you warned us about in the beginning, which is self-awareness as the first tool. So we are right up on an hour. I want to be respectful of your time. Let's just talk briefly about your coaching program, because I know a lot of people who listen to my podcast are going to want to, you know, sort of get involved with your work after listening to you.
Yeah, for sure.
So what is it exactly, and how long have you been doing it? And yeah, tell us all about it.
Yeah, it really is my baby. It's my bread and butter. this is our eighth round that we're moving into in March of 2024. For those of you who might be listening to this later on, moving into the eighth round, it is a certification program for health and fitness professionals. We've had other folks come through too who are of different professions, mental health counselors, doctors, lawyers, nurses, occupational therapists, pretty much anyone who is working with human behavior, which is a lot of people, but it is mainly for online health and fitness coaches to learn how to leverage the science of mindset and behavior change with their clients. So it's a 13-week certification program. We do provide CEUs for a whole host of governing bodies of exercise and nutrition certifications as well. And we start by going into really like the foundations of behavior change and the longstanding theories that we have out there, the frameworks that we essentially can show, like, this is how humans tend to change, how to not change, how to make decisions. We'll talk a lot about mindset, of course, during that time, and then move into what is most people are excited to learn about, things like habits, motivation, goal setting, stress, self-control, growth versus fixed mindset, and essentially how to leverage, again, the science of all of those things and truly, like, how do I put them into a client check-in form? So we're getting very like granular. This is very, very, very applicable to the health and fitness coach. We talk a lot about communication methods and certain questions you could be asking clients. And again, we do a lot of application work. So we're talking about hypothetical client situations. You're coming to live calls where you can bring client cases to us. The final is a case study. So we want you to actually take what you learned and apply it, and we'll give you some great feedback for what to do going forward. And yeah, that's kind of the gist of it. We have a great time. We're always like a close-knit family by the end of it. And you are with me every step of the way. So it is, I say it's self-paced, but instructor-led. So all of the modules are pre-recorded. So you can kind of watch them on your own time throughout the week, 15 minutes here, 10 minutes there, whatever you want to do. But then we'll get together on a live call to kind of, again, apply the information, talk about how this might make sense for your clients and that sort of thing. So we have that live call that is somewhat optional, but also a really good time every single week.
Yeah. And actually, let me just say something about this to all of you listening. So I sought Casey Joe out for this, right? So, you know, usually when you, when someone has a certification, they're like, hey, can I be on your podcast? I want to promote my certification. It's the other way around here. I actually wanted Casey Joe to come on this podcast because my contention is that we're just not doing this well. We're all focused on, you know, and even in some of my certifications that some of you have taken, you know, like the female fat loss certification and other certifications, these things are not going to be effective without Casey Joe's certification. From my perspective, I wanted her to come on because I wanted to have people understand that this should be the first thing that you professionals actually get educated on, because all the other stuff is not going to work without this understanding. And so that's why I wanted you on. So I do think this is very different, because I know you guys listen to a ton of different podcasts and someone comes on and they want to promote their thing. I actually told Casey Joe, please come on so you can promote this, because I'm so passionate that people need this. And I do think, Casey Joe, you are the teacher to do this. You're incredibly humble. You're brilliant. You really are bringing something that we all need. So I just want to say thank you. And it just thrills me that you agreed to come on. And I just highly recommend all your work to everyone. Before we go, you're constantly educating online. So where do people find you on social media? Where do they find you on your websites and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, thank you. That was so sweet. I so appreciate you. I spend most of my time on Instagram as far as social media goes. You'll find me on TikTok. You'll find me on YouTube, but it is minimal. And it's not actually me most of the time. It's my team repurposing stuff. But I'm Coach Casey Joe across all platforms. So it's Coach with a C, but Casey with a K. Joe without an E. We'll throw that one in there too. And if you're interested in learning more about the certification program, you can go to healthmindsetcert.com. It's the Health Mindset Coaching Certification. There's an Instagram page for this certification as well, but that should pretty much get you started, and tons of free content as well, tons of valuable information just to really get you started on like what is the art of coaching.
Yeah. I'm so excited for my community to get to know you. Thank you so much for your work. Don't hang up the line because I just want to make sure all this gets uploaded. But for all of you listening, thanks so much for hanging out. I hope you love Casey Joe the way I do. And we will see you at the next show.
You have been listening to the Next Level Human podcast with Dr. Jade Tita. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure you subscribe and consider leaving a review. You make the biggest difference when you pass on your lessons and inspire others. That's why reviews like this are so powerful. Your words may be the only ones that resonate for someone else. Please remember, the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only. Always consult your personal physician or therapist before making any lifestyle changes. And finally, thank you for who you are in the world and the difference you make.